You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You're about to listen to Goosebuds. This is Chad Quant. This feed is free, but if you want to hear these episodes earlier and ad-free, you can subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/goosebuds, which also gives you bonus episodes, our Discord, and more. Please subscribe to support the show. Now enjoy this episode of Goosebuds. Love your gamer chair, by the way.
That this is my gamer chair behind me is actually my fiance's gamer chair. I have a very boring office chair. I have given up on the gamer's lifestyle.
Entirely, really, or have. In terms of professional merchandise?
In terms of my back is not a gamer's back.
Dude, yeah.
That's the bigger thing, is that really that every time I've sat in a gamer chair, I have never actually enjoyed it, I don't think. I've accepted it.
I love this hot take, because I agree. Yeah.
Here's the thing. When the pandemic first hit, and everyone was, like, buying up gamer chairs because they realized they had to stay at home all day.
Yeah.
And I truly, at that point in time, was like, why are you doing this? I can't. But I think it's just my back. I think it's just I personally can't sit in a gamer chair in a comfortable way, and that's why I need to sit in my special little ergonomic office chair.
But, dude, you know, same. No, I have an ergonomic chair. I have an old man chair. The pandemic when it first hit, the only weird one I bought was a this is not an ad, by the way. I think it was called the Couchmaster or something. It's the most, like, little king man thing I've ever had, where it's like
that's
cushions
amazing.
All around you and a keyboard set up, and I just played Frostpunk.
Is incredible. That sounds very nice. I will say, now this is a very recent development. I was playing through all of the new game Clair Obscur, it's a great game, and I was like, you know what? I have accepted that this is a game I'm going to sit here and play like 7 hours of straight. And so I created a similar cushion throne on the ground, actually, in front of my TV. I built it up. And the thing is, it's still there, even though I beat this game about a week and a half ago. And I keep being like, I'll get rid of the gamer's throne soon enough. But not yet, just in case. Just in case I need the gamer's throne soon.
A little nest, yeah, if you will.
It's worth it, you know.
I've been waiting to play Clair Obscur. I've been waiting for my physical copy for like a month and a half. It seemed like it was a huge success.
Oh man, well, you'll love it.
What I understand of the concept, and this is not really a spoiler for it, right? But is it like it's called Expedition 33 because there is some dark god that kills you when you turn 33?
It is, so it's not specifically just 33, but it is based on age.
Okay.
But yes, you are correct, and I will. I appreciate the fact that they kind of just are like, we're not going to explain any of this, and you're
cool.
Just kind of get it from vibes, and I think that that's perfect. But yeah, it's a good game. It's a fun one.
The gist I had gotten, and please, this is probably awful podcast intro of me just guessing at the plots of Clair Obscur.
No, please.
I assumed it was like, oh, you die when you're 33, and this is a bunch of 32-year-olds who are all like, let's go kill God.
Yeah.
Am I wrong? Yeah, am I right at all?
That is basically it. It follows the JRPG experience of we are out to kill something that we have no understanding of. And also, it's so French. And that's great. those are the big things about Clair Obscur that you need to know, is that it's like standard kill god stuff. Sure. And also super French, and I love it.
What would you say are the testaments of, I mean, I feel like I know a little bit of French culture, Amelie.
Yeah, well, it's truly, the thing is, my understanding of French culture is that very baseline, like, if I were to say it to a French person, I'd be very embarrassed. But they lean into that. And for that, I respect them, is that as a French development team, the fact that they have, and this is kind of not really a spoiler, but there is a cosmetic called baguette,
I've
where
seen
you
the baguettes.
Wear a striped shirt and have a baguette on your back. And I was like, this is why I love that they're leaning into it. I don't know why more American developers don't have like a hamburger clown costume,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like
cowboy
absolutely.
Hat made out of burger.
Exactly.
Yeah, a gun, an unlicensed
gun.
Yeah,
that's always, yeah, it's a lean into the culture. It's important.
Did you ever play the any of the Remedy games, like Alan Wake or Control? Or?
Oh, yeah. I love Remedy. They're great.
I was enjoying playing through Alan Wake 2 on sort of the, I'm hoping to say the right country, but the Swedish of
are
them?
They? I'm double checking it right now. They might be Finnish, or they
Finnish.
Might.
Finnish listeners.
Let me check if that is correct, because I know that that is very, very important. Yeah, it's a Finnish game studio.
But there's like, even though it's set in the Pacific Northwest, there's just this mm-hmm. like definitive, why is everyone vaguely Nordic here?
Yeah. I love it. It's great. It's so fun. Also, I have to say, I just love the Finnish accent. It's like, it is, there's enough overlap in a lot of Scandinavian countries, but I just like, I just recently went to Iceland, and
oh, cool.
Not the same country, not the same language, but also the same similar sort of tone in the accent. And I could listen to it for hours.
Yeah,
it's
partly my closed, bubbled Western life. But I think the fact that I know so little about it, when I hear like Ati, that janitor in
yes.
Control, I'm like, yeah, I believe your magic. I believe
yeah,
you have something
you have
going
to be.
On. Some ancient
if you
language
speak like
you
that, that is,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are these letters? Are these runes? No, it's just just Finnish. Brian, I know you have gone transitioning into out of the internet space a little bit more into, I've seen your name mm-hmm. on like writer trackers and things for the animation industry. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about like how has that been? Like, when did you kind of come out here to LA to get into writing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been an interesting sort of like path, in that I have no idea how it has happened, and like it's been very hard to describe outside of it, where like, so my partner and I are both partners in life and in writing, and so we write together in our we started writing together. It was similar, like during the pandemic when I was still at Polygon, and Karen and I were like, hey, we both want to be writers. Should we just try writing some stuff together mm-hmm. since we're locked in a house and we have nothing better to do? And so we wrote a couple like just little sample pilots and sent those around, and lucky enough got into like a room while we were still in New York for an animated show that doesn't exist because Netflix canned it, like every
oh,
other Netflix
no.
show.
I'm gonna
during
ask
that
you
big...
offline which one that is. I know about a few of those.
Is, yes, yeah. there are so many is the thing.
Yeah.
but through that, like, we got our writing manager, and like after the 15th general meeting we took in New York, where the executives were like, have you considered moving to LA? We realized it was no longer like a have you considered. It was like,
yeah,
you need to move to LA. And so we came out here about 3 years ago. I guess coming up on 4 almost soon.
Congrats.
Thank you. It's we're now like, it's weird to think that I am so close to being more living in LA than in New York now, where like once I pass that 4-year mark, I will be more LA than New York, which is a very hard thing for me to come to terms with, but I am getting there. But yeah, it's been a funny thing to like come out and do still a lot of internet stuff, but also be like, I will say the biggest thing that people think when it comes to converting over from YouTube to writing is that people are like, oh, I bet your YouTube is like really helpful in you getting jobs. It has never been helpful. It has been if anything, it has been a liability.
Really?
Like, truly the main reason why we, Karen and I, have gotten writing jobs is because like people trust and respect Karen, because she was a film critic for years, and she wrote a book about Bong Joon-ho, and her little chuckle fuck boyfriend's gonna stick around too, I guess. And like, that's the extent of bit. But it's been very funny to get into it. But we've been loving it so far.
Have you worried about any bridges you've burned? I mean, like, full disclosure, but this is, so you're coming in to Brian to give you a little bit of the backstory on this podcast. Like, me and my former co-host did, 175 plus episodes of the works of R.L. Stein. And then we burned ourselves out on the works of R.L. Stein. And I think we're also like, are we burning bridges by like critiquing 2-decade-old kids' books?
It's an interesting thing. Like, I definitely know Karen has been like, now that we're in the industry, like, she hasn't been doing as much criticism just because we've been doing other jobs. Sure. Not that she hasn't been like, she's been approached and doing stuff whenever it comes up. But like, there is an element of that where I think it's less in like, I feel weird criticizing a thing online or being just straightforward, mostly because I don't post a lot online anymore. That is not a big deal. But I would say the bigger thing is when I have like hung out with people in real life and been like, I want to talk about what I think about this show, but I can't tell if you worked on it or not. And that, I think, is the bigger thing, is being like, I know you're in this area and I'm not 100% sure. But like, I will also say that on the whole, on the times when I've been like, ooh, yeah, I don't know about this show, and someone has worked on it, they've been like, yeah, same.
No, the fact that whenever you can bond over, like, give me all the drama deets, like, I want to know. Especially animation, right? I mean, I not to put you on the spot, Brian, it seems like you're targeting animation writing, right? Like, that's more the goal.
Yeah, so we are like, it's funny because like Karen and I have two optioned pilots right now that are not animated at all.
Cool.
And they are fully live action, which is it's just kind of like how it ended up writing, but we have done a bunch of animation writing, and like, we love animation. It's just one of those weird things of like, you end up where you end up, and we just happen to think that animation is cool and worthwhile, and like, I think that's a hard, like, I don't know, some just partially because of how the industry is, where like, they pay WGA writers better than TAG writers and things like that, and so it makes it feel, and certainly the executives help in the same way, it makes it feel like everyone hates animation. That's a weird thing to get over, but animation is worthwhile and great, and we love being a part of it.
Oh, I love that, man. Well, also, to your point, it's such a small industry too. It does feel like the same 300 people, as long as they're not, super nut bar, will keep working and doing good stuff, and you will keep running into them. So it's good not to burn.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm glad you're out here. I'm hoping maybe this is a way to segue into what I challenged us both to watch today in review.
Yes.
Was Grandpa's Magical Toys. Let's get into it. By the way,
please,
Brian and listeners, welcome to Goosebuds. I'm your host, Chad Quant. I'm joined by the amazing Brian David Gilbert. You might know his works previously and still currently on the internet from the works of Polygon. Your YouTube channel is fantastic. I think you got some great music, Brian.
Thank you.
I'm blanking on the title, but I play that one you did with Tom Carty, Beautiful Mind.
Oh, yes. Beautiful Mind.
Just on rotation in the house all the time.
Tom is an astounding producer. He is the best. He's so great.
I love that song. But you also, beyond, all the great analysis you have, I asked you to come onto the show and like, what is something that gives you goosebumps? And you reply, I could not believe this, Grandpa's Magical Toys.
Grandpa's Magical Toys. I think when you came to me and were like, this came from a place of goosebumps, I was like, okay, let me think about childhood media that was scary either intentionally or unintentionally to me. And that's why I immediately came to Grandpa's Magical Toys, because it came out, I think, in 1988. Which was the same year my brother was born. And my sister is 4 years older than me in 1990. And this was her favorite movie.
Okay.
This was my older sister's favorite film. And so it's weird because like, I remember watching it a lot, but I also don't remember watching it in its totality because I think it was just a subconscious thing that while I was like one or two, my sister was playing this on repeat and I would just kind of absorb it as I was in the same room as her. And so as a result, I truly did find this terrifying as a kid.
Okay, I'm glad you said that, because I was a little worried you're going to be like, this is the beautiful piece of art. There's nothing wrong with this. Punchinello is pure good. I have nothing funny to say about this. I'm going to talk about how good Weezing is. I'm glad we're going to say it's a horrifying movie.
No, it... Look... Now as an adult and watching it with an adult frame of reference and as like understanding how children's media is created, I can see all the beauty and all the good work and trying to like edutain kids. But as a child, I was horrified of this. I will say I was horrified in a way, you know how like kids get morbid curiosities with things? I think that's what it was for me, where I was both like terrified and yet so fascinated as to why I was so terrified of this.
Yeah, no, there's something there's something maybe artistic about it. There's definitely like some craft put into what seems like a relatively otherwise low budget direct to VHS film.
Yes. I rewatching it, I was like, they've made some choices here. They could have just made it like just like straight one camera, we filmed the whole thing, like that would have been fine. But they made some distinct zoom choices.
Yep.
They made some distinct we're showing reactions of characters. Like there was some artistry in this that I think it was intended. That wasn't unintended.
I think
there's some other beautiful things that just appear unintentionally. But that can also be art, you know?
Yeah, I think maybe not intentionally, and this is maybe more in the digital age where you're seeing this on a full 4K screen, how much the toys that are not yet alive are just lurking in the background, staring at the viewer with blinking eyes. Yeah,
I definitely, like, here's the other thing, is that I'm sure we can go through this chronologically, but there were so many parts of this movie that I forgot existed because they didn't make as deep of an impression in my brain. And then I remember, for some reason, I was like, wow, like, where's the part that I truly remember? It all happens in the last 10 minutes of the movie, and it was so seared in my brain that I thought was the whole thing. Like, truly, full songs that I did not realize were in this movie, because there was one specific song that was constantly in my brain.
I'm curious, what is that song? And then we're
Hambone.
Hambone.
The song specifically.
Which I believe Donald Glover was inspired by for his later album.
Yes.
Sorry, that's Redbone.
Redbone, Hambone, but very close. Yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised. He seems like a guy who grew up on Weezing.
Yeah, Weezing. I never saw this one. I also had a Weezing. I'm curious how much this is for everyone of like, did you just have one and that was your... I had Weezing Together, which I think was the first one.
Okay.
If you look it up, it's got a really charming little Orphan Annie redhead girl who only acted in this and nothing else. Like Grandpa's Magical Toys, two of her toys come alive. I think they are horrifying because they are what looks like they found some old Planet of the Apes masks in storage. And we're like, yeah, we can make a bear out of that. Sure, good. And like...
That's really the thing, is the masks of the... like, the way that they have decided to do anthropomorphic animals is a way that no one should do. And that is, I think, the real source of terror for me, is that that's where it pushes it into uncanny for me.
Yeah, and also this story, it's funny that, you know, in most of these episodes of the podcast, Brian, there's a little bit more of an in-depth story to go through the beats of. This is a pretty, it's a complex and simple story, right? Like,
So, like, if you have never watched Grandpa's Magical Toys, and from what I understand, most of Weezing, because I think I might have seen, I don't think we owned it, but there was like a Big Rock Candy Mountain one.
I saw that.
That,
that looked charming. I would I like the song Big Rock Candy Mountain. I love it.
It's a great one.
It's a great kid song.
Yeah, absolutely. But the thing that it seems to be is that it is just sort of a, let us teach children different story songs and game songs that they can play with other people, and like let's teach them rhythm, and so as a result the plot is not even, I would say, an afterthought. I would say it is truly just tacked on at the very end, right? Just to be like, all right, let's
how do we get to these songs
up.
We have this list of public, I think this is all public domain, it seems like.
This does seem right to me. And
also,
so
it, well, go ahead, please. Yeah, please, Brian.
Yeah, no, I was going to say that that's like the, it is just a wall to wall song after song after song. And again, like each of these characters comes up with a reason to be like, and that's why we're going to talk about cookies right now. Because I thought about it. Now we're going to sing a cookie song.
Yeah, it's, I guess the, we have a menagerie of toys, so we can each just sort of bring each of these up. But even then, it's not, it's, I think it's interesting. I'm jumping in. Let's set the stage a little bit for the listener.
Yes, please.
So in this story, I just want to remark that the story by written by three female creators. I think it's very cool in the 80s to have that, that such a progressive project as this.
Yeah.
We see the start of Grandpa. Going around his room, I don't know about you, Brian. I feel like I could find him incomprehensible. He is like sing-muttering.
Yes, it is very. Also, he's vaguely European.
Yes, vaguely
I don't
European.
Know what the accent is. It's like, I was like, oh, he's German. And I was like, he's Dutch? He's.
No, he's
got. Spanish.
He's got escaped former Nazi vibes. I gotta be honest. He's
there's,
got a
there
bit.
Is a little bit of that. He's got a strange way about him.
Yeah.
There are. I didn't think about this until you said it, but you are right. There is like a little bit of just enough Inglourious Bastards, like cool, calm, and I'm smiling sort of, right?
I know,
like, there's
secrets.
A little bit of that.
Yeah, I have secrets. Exactly. I have, there's a golden treasure that you're looking for in my house.
Yes.
Maybe some occult magic that I picked up from my time in Brazil.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It is a curious, it is a curious energy that he brings. It's both like, I think that might also be a reason why I was terrified of it, was that like, when Peter, the grandchild of this grandpa comes in, I felt absolutely no warmth between those two.
No, Peter seems to dislike grandpa for sure.
Peter seems to be like, I brace myself for this every time I come in. And that is why I needed to bring two of my friends as witnesses.
You gotta see this stuff.
You have to come check out my strange grandpa. He's an odd one, but he's got a cool toy room, I guess.
Well, yeah, also, yeah, I was curious. I don't know if, I think we're kind of around the same age range. I don't know if as a kid I would have found these toys necessarily cool. I think these are kind of boring old, like 1920s toys.
This is, I mean, and similar to the songs too, where I was like, yeah, this is all like, you know, stuff you would play on the playground with your hoop that you push around, right? Like this.
yeah, you're sticking hoop.
Yeah.
And your old World One ration can that you have of candy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's the only way. Yeah, you've sewn together a soccer ball. Like this is, that is the vibe of this whole thing, which I think is also part of the reason why, like, I don't know, maybe that was another element of it for me being a child and watching this and then like trying to go play these games outside and it being like I had time traveled and like the other kids were like, no, we just want to play Beyblades. What are you doing? I don't want to play this song dance thing. Like,
I
don't want
to
do double dutch.
I would love to see little Brian go, no, but let's do the thing where we sit 2 feet away from each other and push the ball back and forth. And
yeah,
we
don't
we
want to do this?
That's what play it is.
Yeah.
I would... I don't want this to be a capitalist commercial, but it did almost feel like a shame that there wasn't like Raggedy Ann doll, Jack in the Box, and then like Hasbro Starscream toy. You know what I mean? Like just one of those. It was like, I'm also alive. Where's Megatron?
Yeah.
Like, that war's gone, Starscream. We're just doing double dutch here.
Come on. It's a peaceful time now, man. You can relax.
Think, I was curious how you feel about this, Brian. So in this start, right before Peter and his friends come in, we see Grandpa cleaning the spot. He's dusting everything. He's singing kind of like Mr. Bean to himself.
Yeah.
That kind of muttering, grunting, where every once in a while you hear a word.
Yes.
But it seems like he is unaware the toys are alive, or maybe he's like, he's kind of like looking over his shoulder like, oh, did that ball just move? Or like, it's going to be a magical day.
Oh my. Yeah. He knows is the thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like after, you know, spoilers by the end, you understand that he's young at heart, but he's also been teleported to this magical toy land. But if that were the case, I would never treat that room like a normal room. And he is absolutely just dusting it as if he hasn't hung out with these sentient
Though
boys
there
before.
Is one shot amongst all the dusty where he's just going on that rocking horse buck wild just by himself. Yeah. Like he's having a great old time.
That is true. Yes. And you know, again, young at heart.
I looked up a little bit on him because I was like, what is with this guy? You know, it looks like Grandpa from Grandpa's Magical Toys is a, let's see, his name is Francisco Franz Reinders. Does sound kind of like a Nazi. Was an active and highly regarded mime, theatrical designer, and fine artist. He grew up in the Netherlands before he moved to the United States. So he founded the Oregon Mime Theater. But that makes all of his, he's a mime. That's why, like, all of his shots, he's like.
Yeah.
You know, like he's just doing big, big faces and everything.
That suddenly makes sense to me. He is built for the big expressions. That's okay. This is all coming together. Again, we're finding the, as an adult now, I'm like, wow, very cool to bring a mime on for this. I think that works great for children's media. But also as a kid, I'm like, why is Grandpa doing this?
I think
my grandpa's nothing like this.
With this in Clair Obscur, I think France is back, baby. I think France, this is the time. The cultural renaissance.
I hope that for some reason, this is the thing, is mimes and Clair Obscur have finally brought France to the forefront.
Grandpa's Magical Toys DLC in Clair Obscur, please.
Yes.
But yeah, you mentioned, Peter, I guess, is the lead kid. He's brought his two friends in.
Mm-hmm.
He does have, I'm very curious, Peter has a lot of, like, big old sighs before he, like, tells more. He seems very burdened with his grandfather.
Special grandpa, Peter.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, there does seem to be, I was wondering, is that a, that's an arc for him to come to appreciate his grandpa by the end of this experience? But also, it did, again, I think that's why I got the vibe of, like, him being like, oh, I have to do this. This is something my mom requires me to do. We have to go hang out with grandpa once every week. And I'm always upset because he doesn't have a Nintendo. Only has these old toys.
That the most Peter has ever seen, he's like, I swear one time, Punchinello the clown toy winked at me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You gotta see
that
this
also. I was taken aback by how willing he was to bring that up to his friends. If that was me, I would die with that knowledge. Yeah. I would never ever be like, hey, the real reason I brought you guys in here is that I swear to God, this dude winked at me. Please stare at him. Please. I need you to confirm
One of us must always be looking forward at Punchinello. Yes. We can't all turn our backs at him at one time. He's like weeping angels. Okay. We gotta keep an eye on him. I kind of wondered if Peter was like, not to your point, Brian, I wonder if, like, he's bringing these two kids, not as a sacrifice, but, like, I need...
Just as protection.
Yeah, really. I need someone. Or if Punchinello's going to take someone, he's going to take them. He's going to take the sad kid.
David, right? David is... I'll tell you one thing. Rewatching this now, I'm like, I'm really David-coded. Like, I absolutely get this kid so much. It's, like, truly the best example of, like, yep, here's this extremely shy kid, and yet also he's super willing to do a very bad British accent guy.
I loved it. So when was a British sailor shows up?
Yes.
Feels like he's kind of razzing him, like, out of nowhere. He's just like, you sound like you're from London. Just, like, kind of throwing it back at him.
Seems to be the problem, old chap. You seem to be having a very difficult time of it.
Well, there's
this he really commits so hard to making fun of this guy as soon as he meets him, and I think that that's great. I think it's perfect. He also, I mean, granted, not like the sailor was also bringing a game.
No, these are all
London
local
accent.
Pacific Northwest
are,
actors, I think.
Yes, which is, it's beautiful. But like, truly, the fact that David, I was like, you have the best accent of everyone in this room. Like, you're doing it, man. I'm impressed.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own. surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Also, I was going through the IMDb. Very few of these actors ever did other stuff besides maybe like Punchinello's and one or two Wastings.
Okay.
David, this is his only thing.
Wow.
The girl's name. I should know her name is Sarah because her opening bit is her name is Sarah. It might be Sarah. I didn't get that joke, Brian. Did you?
Yeah, that was just a. Yeah, I guess it was. It was a little odd. It was just, I think there was just that pacing of like, this is a weird response to him being like, oh, and you might be Sarah, and being like, this, there's no way a kid would ever respond in this sort of joke. Like, I don't, yeah. It feels very old to me, but yeah, you know, it's still there. I appreciate that they went for it.
Grandpa starts off their adventure of like, I've lost my golden key. Please help me find it.
Mm-hmm. Which is a great, an immediate thing for like I kind of am a little jealous that I never had like a grandpa be like I have a golden key and it's missing. You have
oh gem encrusted golden key also.
It's gem. Yeah. Also, what is going on with this blinged out key? Like what there's a lot.
It opens the door to Kingdom Hearts is how it felt like.
Exactly. Yes, I think you are correct.
Grandpa quickly bounces. Because he has messages from Brazil to intercept and to use through the Interpol machine. And I believe it is just, Peter and his friends open up the music box, which transforms them.
Yes, I think it's not even an open up situation. It's just that David bumps into it or something, right?
Yeah.
It's just it's a classic. Oh, here comes the comedic relief doing something silly and getting us into trouble. But they immediately shrink. They also love in both the shrinking and the growing thing. They're like, oh, the room is growing. No, we're shrinking. No, it's both. And I was like. It could be both. I really don't know. I don't know why you need to. You're saying this as if this is really important justification for what is happening right now. I don't need to know the logic of this.
As these kids, yeah, I think they roll with it.
They are super on board in a very surprising way. I would be, again, as someone who is David coded, if I were David, I'd be freaking out right now.
This is the most fun attention David's ever had. I agree with you, Brian. I think I was probably I was definitely more of a David than a Peter or why am I blanking on her name again? I'm so sorry, Sarah. I'm so sorry, Sarah. She has like one spotlight in the middle with Double Dutch, and then she kind of just falls to the wayside of the story. So I forget about her.
It's true. Yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah, but David, who I feel like there's an unintentional. Oh, by the way, Brian, not to interrupt this. We have a join, Brian. Let me welcome you a surprise guest.
Oh my God! No way,
Kevin Hageman, Peter from Grandpa's Magical Toys.
Peter, it is so incredible to meet you. I have been explaining through this entire podcast about how meaningful this movie was to my childhood and how it was my older sister's favorite movie, and how truly. When Chad, you mentioned that you knew Peter, but I did not know that Peter was going to be joining today.
a surprise guest. We have Peter himself, the man who inherited Grandpa's Magical Toys, I assume, is the canon of that. Oh, Kevin Hageman, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
Okay, so I need you to explain... First off, who are you now? I think we should probably start from that because originally I was about to go right into Peter lore, and then I thought, no, I should care about you as a person first.
Well, okay, hold on one second. One question for you. So, did you had the old videotape?
Had the VHS, yes.
Okay, you had the VHS, and you'd pop it in and watch that Grandpa's Magical Toys over
over and over again. It was, again, my sister, this was her, like, repeat play. Like, my older brother's repeat play was, I think, The Little Mermaid. My sister's was specifically We Sing Grandpa's Magical Toys.
Equally artistically merited as both Little Mermaid and Grandpa's Magical Toys.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, it's nice to meet you, Brian, and I'm so happy. It's always nice. You know, it's not, the film wasn't, you know, it isn't like a Disney classic. It's not, it's a bit of a niche, you know.
Kevin, I want to let Brian, I've already asked Kevin many times. Kevin and I worked, he was so kind to hire me on Trail Hunters, and then we worked together again on Star Trek Prodigy. And I think it was the first time I had seen Grandpa's Magical Toys was in the writer's room for Star Trek. So I already hit you with a few questions. So I want to let Brian, you please. Please go ahead.
Well, first question I just want to ask, was this this is a very important question. In that writer's room, was it someone else who brought up the fact that you were in Grandpa's Magical Toys? Or were you like, okay, everybody, you need to sit down and understand me?
It's typically when we're in a writer's room, I work with my brother, my younger brother, and he loves to say, all right, let's pull the TV screen out. I got to show you something about Kevin. And we deep dive into Grandpa's Magical Toys.
Seem like a very little brother thing to do.
When you were a kid and you booked this gig, was your younger brother Dan like super jealous of you?
Totally. We were doing this in Oregon, like Portland, like film and TV wasn't being done up there. So this was like, this is like being casted in some, you know, Christopher Nolan movie or something, right? You know, it's like a big deal. And then my little sister, so my younger brother is the middle child. My younger sister, she was a professional ballerina. And so she was cast in another We Sing, where she was a ballerina in the musical Mansion, I think. So anyway, so I think definitely my brother's deep down just crying.
Oh my god! Yeah, that's. I mean, if you are in a family of We Sing royalty and you are not, that's a hard thing to come to terms with.
Just walking around the house muttering, "How much is that doggy in the window?" Just like hoping you could like get a role sometime.
You know what? Here's my thing. I have two young kids now, and so I mean, well, they're now like 12 and 14. But when they were little, you know, you'd always sing your child a song and say, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to always sing, you know, say, say, oh, playmate, come out and play with me. And, you know, and like, that's the song I just chose, like, I'm not going to sing different songs. I'm just going to make this song. I'm going to burn this song into their brains and they're going to always remember me.
Incredible. That's so good. The other thing rewatching it now as an adult, I was struck by how talented you three children were. That was the other thing, was that I was like, okay, Sarah can do double dutch. Also, you had to do a couple like surprise, like there were
some
you
basketball
had to do some
skills.
Talents.
You had to do some and between the knees, dribbling.
Yeah, those are challenging.
It was very the jump rope sequence, right?
Yeah.
You get a double jump rope and there's like a whole bunch of people at once and someone is usually messing it up. And it was like, take number 29.
I was curious because the story is kind of revolved around your friend David, right?
Yes.
Who he's mustering the courage to join the double dunch.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't get in, I believe. I believe he's just like, I'm good.
Did you just rewatch this too, Chad?
Yeah. You did great, Kevin. I watched this last night with a splitting migraine, and I got to say, it really enhances the music to hear Punchinello for 7 minutes long.
Punchinello's great. The other thing that took me by surprise, again, something that I apparently wasn't into as a kid, but now as an adult, I'm like, oh my god, you had the cutest little pig on set. Penelope, right?
Penelope the pig.
Yeah.
What? And, you know, if you look closely, there's a shot, I think it's the Say Say Oh Playmate sequence, but there, I think. It's during a song, and there's the shot of the pig racing, you know, the farmer's trying to grab the pig, and the pig's racing, and the pig drops a little turd.
I gotta go back. I gotta scrub.
Because I know everyone is just itching for just those details.
They are.
Yeah.
Yes. I am those people. I'm the one itching for the details.
I'm one of like three in the world.
I've, you know, not met a ton of people in Hollywood, but like I tend to not get starstruck or like feel like I need to tell my family about meeting a specific celebrity or whatever. I need you to understand that for the rest of the day, my siblings and I are going to be texting about how I met Peter from Grandpa's Magical Toys. Like, this is so important. So important.
You know what was, I haven't, you know, other than my brother trying to embarrass me in writing rooms. About a year ago, we had gotten a letter, and there was a woman, a young woman who had cancer, and she, her friend was reaching out, and she and this friend was like, they grew up watching Grandma's Magical Toy. It was the, you know, and so we secretly got this reunion of so many of us actors, and we did a Zoom together with her and surprised her. And she was just like crying, and it was just
That's so lovely.
So fun.
That's so amazing.
So you're still in touch with some of the actors from this project?
No. I mean, it had been 30 years since I've seen most of these people. Like, David doesn't look like David anymore. Right? Like, he was 10, you know. Here's a fun little thing. So,
yeah, please, hit us with all the trivia. Behind the scenes gossip.
What was fun or embarrassing, I guess, was I played like Peter. I was supposed to be like 10, but I was like in high school at the time.
Oh, that's why you're so tall. I was like, why are you so much higher than everyone?
So I looked young for my age. And then David and Sarah, they were a little bit younger. They were actually 10. And I remember on the set behind, they had a crush with one another. And there was like,
we
love a showmance.
Oh my God. And there was this secret romance between these, you know. And then, so it was like so funny and cute, right? So funny and cute. And then there's like 7 days left to shoot. And then they broke up.
Oh no.
Oh no.
Wow.
Do you think that affected any of the scenes? Could you feel the like the loss of love between
them? Oh yeah. Yeah, there was.
Yeah, I got you. Got you. Have to tell us which scenes you shot last, so that way I can go back through.
I don't know. I don't know.
I love that you had a true like. You know, how many other did you do other acting after this before I make my comment here?
I was found because I knew the creator of Wee Sing. I went to high school with her daughter. We did a lot of theater. A lot of theater together, and so I think they saw me on stage and thought I was good.
Yeah,
and I had like an agent, you know, but I was doing commercial work and just, you know, it's Portland, Oregon.
Yeah,
you know, Mr. Holland's Opus, the movie, was filming at one point, and I almost was cast, but then my character got cut, and that was going to be my big one.
Oh, yeah. Really? Who were you in Mr. Holland's Opus, or who were you going to be?
It was some student that got. Cut. A character got cut.
Crusher.
Some kid that's doing drugs, and Mr. Holland's got like, you gotta quit the smack. No.
I was the like the honor student.
Oh yeah. They said we don't need this one.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, I'm glad to know this because I was like, at the very least, you had what seems to be a perfect microcosm of Hollywood production in that you had a terrible breakup on set while you were filming and you had to push through and keep acting and just you know, put the personal behind us.
Yes.
You really, and you created an incredible product.
Oh my gosh. It was a really amazing experience. Really great people.
That's great.
You know, it was this Oregon. You know, I think, you know, you get paid very little money, but it was, you know, maybe 3 weeks worth of filming.
Yeah.
It was such a blast.
That's so cool.
You know, you get to be miniaturized and be on set and everything.
They did that for real? They shot you for real? They put you down there in tiny?
They shot me down for 3 weeks straight.
the price we have to pay for art,
it takes a toll.
I can only imagine. That set, I truly looked like so much fun. The big set, I was like, this looks like a blast. Like all these big versions of the toys, that is my dream as a kid.
It is
Which of the actors had the big ego? Was Grandpa as a professional mime? We found out before you joined that he was a mime college creator. That's a term. Was he cool, Grandpa?
Wait, who? Which
Grandpa? Grandpa himself. yeah, it was a mime.
Super sweet. You know, he was older, so I think his memory was a little. You know, we had to do takes a few times.
Yeah.
Everyone was super nice. I would say, I'm just trying to remember. I had a crush on Dutch Girl.
Oh, yeah.
Understandable.
She was older. I mean, she was, you know. And then there's Lad and Lassie. They were the other kids.
That's right. Yes.
The only kid toys. I thought that was an interesting contrast. Yeah. But also not a ton of time on the movie. They're kind of there and gone.
No. I had a crush on Dutch Girl, and I just remember this is the behind the scenes for the adult fans. But I had a crush on her, and I remember, but you know, it was like behind scenes, like she and like Farmer Ted would like smoke, you know, between takes, you know. But, and I remember like we had to rehearse the jump rope, right?
Sure.
And she wore this tank top, and she didn't wear her bra.
Oh my god,
salacious.
I'm like I don't know, 14 or something, and I was just like, oh my god,
yeah, that's I can definitely relate to like the 14-year-old having a crush on a woman who is way older, and like just that feeling of
and
being like
girl. And she's super funny and cute, and like,
oh she's like, not to put the other actors on, I think she's the most besides yourself obviously, Kevin, I think the most charismatic of the of the actors. I looked her up. Jack Drew played the Dutch Girl.
Yeah.
One of the few that went on to do other acting. It was in Power Rangers Ninja Steel as someone named Madame Odious.
Rangers, your time is up. Prepare to be destroyed once and for all.
Who I'm assuming is the bad guy. So she's still out here. She's still out here in the industry doing stuff.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
That's fantastic.
It.
Also, I did appreciate the choice to make the Dutch Girl sound like Harley Quinn.
Yeah, she's doing like a Boston accent.
Yeah, there's something going on there, which is, but it's a bold choice, and I love it.
Yeah, and I'm punching the actor who played. I don't remember people's names. It's been so long, but the actor who played Punchinello, sweetest man in the world.
That's
so great. To sit, I remember, and then the guy who played the monkey, he had all this monkey, you know, effects or makeup on.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there on the lunch break trying to eat, and he had to have a straw, like everything had to be food.
Yeah, the animal, I was saying this before you hopped on, but the anthropomorphized animals were the thing that I was definitely most afraid and fascinated by, was like, I didn't understand how the faces could look like that when I was a young one watching this VHS.
Yeah.
Yes.
They got the Planet of the Apes like coconut mouths, like that kind of just like a dome muzzle that is a little unsettling.
Uh-huh. Low budget Planet of the Apes makeup. Yes.
Yeah.
No, but actually, here's a fun story. The makeup guy, super sweet guy, and he would just give us makeup for, you know, normal, whatever you call it. And it was a smart thing with us kids. He's like, if you guys behave well whenever we do makeup each day, at the last day, I will give you like some cool scar or blood. Or
something. Oh my God.
And this makeup guy recently did The Blob. There was a remake of The Blob that was filmed in Oregon.
That's amazing.
Really good, with Kevin Dillon. And he was the makeup artist, and he had a jar with like a little blob in it from that movie. And anyways, so I was well behaved, and he gave me these like three scars, these blood, kind of like not fresh bloody, but sort of like a couple days old, you know, but like gnarly looking scars on my face and bruised my eye up and stuff. And then I wore it all the next day. I didn't shower. I wore it. I went out with my friends.
Went to sleep with it on, just like.
Oh, yeah. But I went to the movies and went everywhere, and everyone's just like, this kid, and I looked like I was just beat to shit. Like I was like,
The set of Weezing's pretty tough. Pretty tough to be on sets on Weezing.
The monster clawed my face. I just would go around treating like everything was fine and normal, and people were constantly giving me looks.
That's so great. I can't think of anything I wanted more at that age than to look like I had just been beaten up but not have any of the pain associated with it. Like, I definitely, that was like, 14 was the age where I was like, I want to have battle damage. I want to look like I've been through some stuff. Like, I'm a real warrior.
The scar across the one eye.
That is genius. I do think I know a few actors that could be more well-behaved if they were offered that. I think that, like, even myself, I think I'm a pretty well-behaved guy, but when I'm in a makeup chair, if they were like, I'll put scars on you afterward, I'd be like, I'm not gonna talk, I'm gonna be very still.
Yeah,
it'll be extremely good for you
because it's early in the morning, you're doing your makeup, you have to sit there for an hour. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard for a kid.
Yeah,
so I thought that was a smart move by him.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's so cool.
Kevin, yeah. I have a bit of a kind of, just if you can recall yourself, this has been like 30 years ago when you were Peter. In your mind, how much did Peter suspect the toys were? You mentioned Punchinello, that you maybe saw him wink, and you bring these friends in. How much are you suspicious of Grandpa? Do you think Grandpa's got magical powers going into this? How do you? there's a couple times where maybe I was just intuiting to it, Kevin, or maybe I've just seen you do that same reaction to me when I'm pitching you a joke in the writer's room, of just like a big sigh of, you're just like, Grandpa's a lot to deal with. Grandpa's got like.
I think if you will look closely, Peter is a little suspicious of Grandpa.
Okay.
You know, Grandpa's always getting into trouble.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, now, you know, IP is king in the industry these days.
Yeah.
Have you considered rebooting Grandpa's Magical Toys?
I mean, it deserves a sequel.
Yeah. Peter, bring them all back.
Grandpa passed away. Peter now has his own family.
Yes.
Grandpa passed away, and so the house is Peter's now, right?
Yeah.
So they go there. They're going to have to go through Grandpa's old stuff and get rid of stuff. And there's the music box, right? Right. I'm just coming up with this right now.
No, but this is Dan's bread and butter for stories. I feel like it's like this and Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. I think you guys could like combine those two things of like, Punchinello's gotten a little crazed in the last 30 years because he's gone neglected, and he's like, wants closure, right? Like, he's coming after you.
I mean, I did always imagine that there would be a sequel, and it was like Grandpa's like Scary Toys or something.
Yeah,
you
know, I both understand and also I'm like, you know, we give too much of a hard time to like children's media and like how it can be scary, even though that is what I'm doing too, where I'm like, I'm admitting I found it frightening a little bit when I was a child.
Yeah.
But I'm like, there is that inherent sort of scariness, I think, is rewatching Grandpa's Magical Toys now, I'm like, wow, that was like, there's nothing scary about any of these people. They're all doing their best.
Was it scary when you were little? Was there kind of a bit of fear?
It was specifically, so I was saying this before, but it's the Ham Bone song that scared me the most. It is.
Oh, yes.
When it is the
Ham
like
the
swirl and it was the zoom. It was the zoom is the thing. I like, and before it happened again, watching it today, I was like truly astounded at how I had like a visceral reaction before the shot happened, and I was like, why do I feel this way? And then it was just the
Hambo.
And I was like, whoa, okay, I remember now why
she had the makeup on too. Yes. As a kid, you're like, what's wrong with her face?
It was like the combination of the makeup just being perfectly uncanny, and then like the zoom in to being like, whoa, okay, this person sees me, is what I felt like. That's that's the fear that I received.
Well, and her, you know, her performance with that close-up, you see the fear in her own eyes. Like, she seems a little unsure about this creative direction of.
Yeah, I mean, it is both, like, and I say, you know, I think that horror and comedy are just the same coin.
Yeah.
And truly, it is that perfect moment where I was like, I feel the fear, and I also feel all of the hilarity of this choice. It is one of the funniest, it is the most affecting thing in the whole movie to me. But again, that might just be nostalgia talking.
I forgot about Ham Bone. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
No, don't forget.
I could never forget Ham Bone.
Besides Punchinello. Oh, go ahead, please, Peter.
I was gonna say, with Ham Bone, like, those ladies had those big furry costumes, and the set was like 110 degrees or something.
Oh no.
Yeah, so I think when you saw her, she was probably exhausted. Like,
yeah, I can only imagine. Yeah, yeah. It seemed very strenuous. I would say that, like, I appreciated the fact that all of the heavy makeup and costume work was all for adults. And, like, you know, even the other toy children, they just have to wear vaguely Scottish garb.
Yeah. I was curious, Kevin, we talked before you came on, like, about, I think, other unintentionally scary was seeing the actors of toys that have not yet activated lurking in the background. And is that just, like, days of recording where it's like, all right, monkey, just stay back there. You're a statue. Yeah. Like, don't react to us.
Position. Match exactly. Yes. And then remember, he was so hot. So he had to sit in there with the makeup and the hot suit. I mean, oh, man.
Rough.
We worked hard to bring joy to kids' lives.
Yeah, clearly managed.
As a writer, you know, very accomplished writer now, Kevin, you know, I want to ask you to not to make you critique and bite the hand that fed you as a 14-year-old. What would you change in the Grandpa's Magical Toy Story if you were doing a rewrite or a reboot? What would you shift it to?
I think you know, we had a very minimal budget, and I think the concept of it is super fun. You know,
kids
get shrunk down and toys come to life. You know, like, I wish it would be so fun to see that remade with the bigger budget, with all these cool, fantastic toys coming to life around them. That would be cool.
Yeah. And maybe a little bit of, maybe a few product placement tie-ins. Maybe again.
Yeah, I mean, why not? Like, that would be awesome.
Mattel's making a lot of movies these days. I'm sure they could purchase up the Wee Sing property.
You've worked with Lego. Get some Lego in there.
Last I heard, it was like privately owned by these two women who created it. Right?
Okay,
It seems to be like...
Really
a very
well.
Good edutainment like thing. Like, they really did do, I mean, obviously we're talking about it 30 years after the fact. Like, this is, it has had an important effect on my life. And I'm like, I learned a lot about music from these.
And then I think at a certain point it was sold to Universal. I think Universal.
Of course. Of course. Greedy capitalists consume and buy up everything as innocent and pure.
Yeah. They probably have the, I'm curious if, yeah.
There's the one guy somewhere in the Universal company who's like, I'm in charge of the Wee Sing IP. And, like, I will guard it with my life until
the It'll never be remade.
I know. They're just sitting on it to be there. They're keeping it from, again, the public that has been clamoring for more Wee Sing.
Yes.
Maybe you just add an extra E to it and you just break the copyright. It's just Wee Sing.
Wee Sing.
Yes. Yeah, this is incredible, though, to like it did. I will say it felt like there might be an element of like, hey, we know this talented kid from high school that, like, as you were saying, you were friends with the creator's daughter. Mm-hmm. Like, but it also, I don't know, as a child, as a person who was watching it, I did think, I was like, this is the most impressive set I've ever seen. I have never seen a more, the graphics on this are incredible. Like, truly, like,
and you were like four.
Probably. Yeah. But it helped give me a critical eye, you know? This was one of my first journey on understanding.
For me personally, I was, I don't remember what I watched when I was that young, four, but, cause I'm a little older than you. I don't think we had a lot of options. But when I was 11 is when I saw Goonies. And that was, that's everything you're talking about. Like, I saw myself in Mikey, in the main character.
Yeah.
And it was like the greatest wish fulfillment that I wanted this in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to hang out with a clown and play Patty Cake.
I don't normally like a clown, but Punchinello did kind of sit, win me over, even him being a French clown, right? I think, yeah.
I swear, some of that choreography is, like, burned in my brain.
Yeah. There was more choreography than I both remember and also was expecting. Like, there was enough in there that I was like, this required a handful of rehearsals beforehand. This, like, you really needed to get it in. Yeah.
Maybe this is how you get it back, actually. Is like, you get, like, a TikTok craze going. Instead of doing, like, the Charlie XCX Apple song, it's like, Punchinello, you know?
You know, whatever goes viral as a TikTok song clip, you can't choose what that is. Yeah. But I guarantee you that there are at least a few clips from Grandpa's Magical Toys that would become trending sounds. I promise you that.
Well, sadly, the fans like you, they're in their, I don't know, 30s. How old are you?
Yeah, I'm 31.
Now? So yeah, they're in their 30s. I don't think any.
But we're now the generation that's supposed to have kids. I don't know. I mean, Brian, I know you don't have kids either, but like, I'm getting, despite not having kids, constant ads and marketing for like, oh, I'm supposed to have a 7-year-old right now. Like, I'm supposed supposed to have a toddler. I'm supposed to take them to Trolls 5. You know, here's a cover.
I can't, for the life of me, with my kids, when they were little, I showed them Grandpa's Magical Toys. You know, look, it's Daddy. You know, they were just like, what? You know, they didn't enjoy it. Everything I've done, like Ninjago, you know, they were little, the perfect age. It's like, I can't win.
It's crushing. That's difficult. But that also, you know, that they understand the importance of looking outside of just your home for culture and entertainment, and you have to really spread a wide net as you are learning about media as you are a child.
Yeah.
I will say though that I never had, like, my parents were not in the industry of any sort. Like, I definitely, the closest I had to that was my mom wrote a little like humor column for our local paper. Mm. And so I didn't think of my mom when I was a kid as being like someone that people knew. And then sometimes random people would come up to me and be like, did this thing really happen to you in your life? And I'd be like, how do you know about this? And my mom had written like a humor column about it before. And so like my principal would say this and it would like absolutely blow my mind, because like, again, when I was like 7 or 8, like I didn't have a concept of my mom being a human being. She was just my mom. Yeah. Right. Like that's not. And so I can understand if your kids are watching We Sing and having trouble being like, you were a kid too? That doesn't make any sense. How you also did this thing? What is going on right now?
It's like an early parasocial relationship with your mom the town had.
Exactly, yes.
Oh my gosh. No, it was all very, growing up in Oregon, it was all very foreign and weird. Yeah. And, you know, even with the contact that I had with one of the creators of We Sing, I still had to go through auditions and, you know,
yeah.
It was down to
You're no Nepo hire. You put your time
no.
in.
No. Yeah. No Nepo hire here.
Kevin, I feel like this was an amazing surprise. I should let you go back to your living kids. Brian, do you have any other questions for Peter the boy?
Well, I just want to double check again before I go and pitch this to every executive I know. Would you be willing to reprise your role as Peter?
Oh, of course. That would be hysterical.
Great. Good to know. Thank you. That's all I needed to know. I just needed to have your sign off.
Okay. Sarah, I haven't heard from Sarah since we filmed. David, I've spoken to.
Okay. Right. I would love to know if they, like, as adults, they find each other again. They rekindle that love.
Yeah.
I think you got to do a sequel. They're all adults. David, it feels like he's a little messed up from
oh yeah Pete. Yeah we already saying he's both kind of the awkward kid in the group,
right? He has to get Sarah and Peter back to deal with this trauma
it's very in part really two
happened. I was thinking exactly right
Sarah's like no that was just it was our imagination, right? We were just having fun that one summer and that music box, and as adults we get brought back into the crazy madness
we sing,
and we have to escape it and have to get back home. I would watch that.
That sounds really cool, actually. I like that.
I would watch that. You make a little complaint.
Kevin, you're the one with all the clout. You got to get this meeting going, dude.
Yeah.
I'm just a writer. In fact, just 10 days ago, my son, he's like 12 now, he's like, Dad, you're a director, right? And I'm like, No, never been. I've been a writer my whole life. Why?
Was he disappointed that you weren't a director? Oh, I thought you were the cool thing, the director that does stuff.
Aww. These kids today, they don't care.
They don't respect writing. I know.
I think if you take him into a shed full of magical toys and give him a couple hours, he'll learn to respect
He will respect me. Yes.
Well, thank you so much. This has been an absolute pleasure to meet you.
Yeah, Brian. Thanks for being a fan of the show. And, you know, it's been amazing. It's just, it's memory lane. It's so nice to be able to talk about it.
It was so great for this to come full circle, glad. Kevin. I hope to see you around soon, not if one of the Star Trek cruises or something.
Yeah, of course. Or Star Trek Las Vegas or something.
Yeah, totally. Thank you. Thank you, Kevin. Yes.
All right, guys. Bye. Take care. Good luck on the podcast.
Thank you. Bye.
Oh my God!
Hope it was okay to spring that on you, there, Brian.
That I mean, it was everything I could have ever dreamed of. I need to we need to wrap up this podcast right now because I need to take a minute.
I know, isn't Kevin? He's just got such an ego. He's so much to deal with.
Yeah, I know. I'm drained. No, he's what a lovely guy, and what a treat. Truly, it is like I'm not joking about being starstruck. Like this is, it is when you are talking about children's media, it like has such a different effect on you. Like I could meet someone that I was like, you know, if I met a high school idol of like being like, oh, a Simon Pegg, a Nick Frost, right?
Yeah,
that would be cool.
Yeah.
But like this is different. This is me meeting a guy who I thought I would never ever meet in my whole life.
I'm happy to do
truly what a dream.
I'm happy to cross those dots and connect those for you. I hope Kevin and his brother Dan are juggernauts in animation industry. Maybe you get to write with them at some point.
Here's hoping.
A few other just notes of interest in this. I do feel like we've covered Grandpa's Magical Toys. Spoilers, the kids go back to normal size. We see that Grandpa has siphoned some of their life energy into a phylactery, and that is why he lives so long. Everything is okay. I did want to point out that besides the horror thing you were talking about, Brian, I think there's some interesting, even though it's a very G-rated kid show, there is like elements of horror in that. Also, the writer of the project, Susan Shadburn, worked in claymation before, which is inherently just a creepy medium. This is a deep cut. I don't know if you're familiar with it. Worked on a project called The Adventures of Mark Twain, which is a
I know what you're talking about only because I have seen that most terrifying clip.
Where Mark Twain is like Lucifer, but he's like a masked, like angel thing.
Welcome to the mysterious stranger.
What?
Hello.
Who are you?
An angel.
Yeah.
So that same person.
That's the same person.
Wrote on Grandpa's Magical Toys and then wanted to do claymation stuff.
That's incredible. That is amazing. And like, I guess I feel it in there. There is an element of like cosmic horror involved in all of this. That is. That's incredible.
You're kind of taking place in the entire movie takes place in sort of an eternal time void where you don't really know where you are in the world or what era it is. All listeners should check out at least that sequence. I believe it's like bargain. I don't know if they ever say it's Lucifer, but you know it's Lucifer.
But it's it's weird if you just search up the name of the show.
Mark Twain Devil Claymation.
Yes. Yeah. Mark Twain very scary. That's all you need to Google and it will show up.
And then the only other thing I think worth shouting out was amongst the other accomplished people on this, the actor who played the farmer, this was his first role, Sam A. Mowry. I was a little starstruck to realize that he is an accomplished voice actor for a ton of video games you probably played. One most to me, I'm a big old Dota kid, which is embarrassing to admit, but he did a ton of voices in Dota, The Shopkeeper, Clockwork, Beastmaster. He passed away in 2024, unfortunately.
Oh my gosh.
But a very storied acting career as well.
That's
so
amazing.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
But first gig is that farmer in Grandpa's Magical Toys.
He kills it. Yeah. And got to carry a very cute pig around, which, again, also a major bonus.
I don't know why. I guess Oregon's not as I'm from the Midwest, which is a pretty, you know, red and conservative and farmer territory. I was so worried Kevin was going to tell that story of like, oh, yeah, at the rap party, we ate the pig. I was so worried.
I'm glad to hear that that was not the fate for Penelope. I choose to believe that even though the lifespan of a pig is not as long as it's been, I'm sure Penelope's still the same exact age and exactly as cute as where she was back then.
Let me give you a recommendation if you haven't gone yet. I mean, this is an unofficial ad for them as well. Now that you're in LA, have you been to a place called Gentle Barn?
No.
Have you heard of it?
I have not heard of this either. I'm surprised.
This is a great weekend trip. Maybe a date day.
Yeah.
It is a shelter for like farm animals, like rescues. Including ones that I think are like TV animals that had like grown too old. But it is just you go and you make a donation. The owner of the farm makes you sit through like a pretty militant like speech that is pretty fun to listen to. That is like one step away from like, we should just kill all humans. And I'm like, don't fully disagree.
I love it.
Don't fully disagree. but then you get to just go and like hang on the farm and like pet a nice cow or like an emu or this bull was used in the promotion of a movie and now it lives here. So like
this sounds right up my alley.
Yeah, I think Penelope is living there in my mind.
I will believe. I'll go up and be like, and where are you keeping Penelope? And they'll be like, only the true know.
The true know. You have to ask.
I will bring you back into where Penelope is held.
I think that's been Grandpa's Magical Toys. Brian, do you have any other things you want to share about this project? Swimming with Starstruck.
It really is. Yeah. I feel like, again, everything that I could say about this, obviously having Kevin on, he could say more than, like, that's unbelievable. What a dream this has been. Thank you so much for having me on.
Of course. Thank you for coming
on. This has been the best.
It's great getting to talk to you about it. I mean, for listeners who aren't familiar with this stuff or want to check out, like, where should they go to? And also, you know, using this attention to be my condolences to Polygon and all of your work. I hope still stays alive on the internet.
The media is a mess, but thank you. You can find me just if you search up my name, Brian David Gilbert. I got a YouTube channel. I got a Patreon. I'm also over doing some stuff on Dropout. I'm the fact checker for Actually.
If I can say, by the way, Actually is the most brilliant game show I've seen in like that. And I don't know if you're a Taskmaster fan at all, but.
That Taskmaster is so good. And like, that's, I think, when Iffy and I took on the helm of Actually, that was something we talked about a lot, was that we were like, we want it to be like a panel show. We want it to be much more like ridiculous, but like, I full disclosure, I don't know when this will come out, but I've been in the midst of fact checking next season's questions right now. So my head is swimming with a bunch of stuff right now. And like, trying to write good statements for Actually is such a weird, beautiful puzzle, and I'm very excited.
It's such a brilliant, if listeners don't know it, the concept, right, is it's a statement, but you have to buzz in with the actually correction of the small minute detail in the statement.
Exactly.
Which is so good. Yeah. so good.
And it's all about nerd culture, but like, we're kind of on, I would say, the radical end of what we believe to be nerd culture. Like, we are this close to doing a sports episode because those people are the biggest nerds. And so, like, we are, but yeah, we've been doing a lot of fun, weird stuff recently, and it's been great to do.
I was high-fiving myself just to brag. I was getting all the Weird Al ones correct.
I love it. I'm so glad.
I was so proud of myself, and was doing it. I'm actually to just the TV screen.
That's what we hope for.
Brian, what's your Patreon, by the way, for people to check out?
Oh yeah, it's also just my name, Brian David Gilbert, but it's it helps me fund my videos. I'm trying to do some more long form stuff this year, even though I've also been again bouncing around with other random projects. But you'll get to see some of my behind the scenes stuff and like some. I also have a free membership there, so even though I don't post much online, if you want to keep up with me, you can just join the free thing and I'll give you a little progress report every month.
That's awesome. Speaking of Patreon, if you're listening and want to support this show, Goosebuds, Goosebuds also has a Patreon. It's the main way we keep this show going. I always refer to we in the royal we. I'm just, even though I'm doing this solo at this point. subscribing gets you access to bonus episodes of Camp Goosebuds, which is dozens and dozens of old episodes of kind of what was the opening bit of Brian and I just, you know, shooting the S and talking about other stuff. It's all filler, no killer. You can listen to those old episodes, hundreds of episodes. New stuff like we're doing Goosebuds Theater, where I'm going to start playing through. Brian, I don't know if you ever played this one. It's a fantastic FMV DreamWorks game called Goosebumps Escape from Horrorland.
No.
It is so good, dude. It has a not yet famous Jeff Goldblum as Dracula and Isabella Rossellini as a mummy. It was a great point-and-click game, so I'll be playing that through on the Patreon. It also gets you access to our Discord community, which is a real rad group of people. You also get the guide direction of the podcast, and you get all episodes ad-free early than before they go on the main RSS feed, and you can also be immortalized forever at the end of this episode in the Book of Names. That's on patreon.com/goosebuds. And any other questions, contact the show, goosebuds@gmail.com. Follow us on Blue Sky. And also, you know, Brian, you might have alluded to this earlier in the episode. Being on the internet and social media is awful and a hell world, and it's tough to promote things nowadays. Mm-hmm. So if you want to help the show, besides supporting it financially, tell a friend about the show. Tell them about Goosebuds. Tell them about Grandpa's Magical Toys. And let them know about this hot exclusive an episode we had. Not only do we have Brian, we had Peter the Boy.
I really need you all to spin up all of the fervor for We Sing and Grandpa's Magical Toys if I'm going to get this sequel off the ground. I need to get some groundswell now.
It's time.
Please, talk about it. Talk about it to everyone.
Please, please get it trending.
I'm begging you. Right now, the full movie is on YouTube and it only has 290,000 views. I need that up at least at 500K by the end of the year, okay?
We'll see if we can make it happen. Brian, thank you once again for being on the show. You're a fantastic guest. Love talking to you. And
wonderful being here. Thanks so much.
Until next time, see y'all. Goodbye.
Bye.
You sure are a corny guy. That's a joke I can sink my teeth into.
What hams?
Hams? Did he say hams?
Hambone, Hambone, have you heard? Papa's gonna buy me a mockingbird.
If that mockingbird don't sing, Papa's gonna buy me a diamond ring.
If that diamond ring don't shine, Papa's gonna buy me a fishing line.
Hambone, Hambone, where you been?
I've been around the world and I'm going again. Hambone.
This episode of Goosebuds is brought to you by our wonderful Patreon supporters, especially those now forever immortalized in the Book of Names. Low Belly Hate Me, Hollis Hornbeak, Nathan Dolezal, Hey Josh Rob, Mickey C, Afshin, Stealth a Beautifully Fleshed Skeleton Bates, Robert Moon, Jason Crooker, DM me, I'll tell you about the Rite Aid fraud. DM, I'll tell you, I realize I haven't messaged you because I'm too scared to know. I'm too scared of the truth. The Juggalobalist, Aiden is doing shots of Skittles Littles, Gregory D. Warren, Jar Jar Slinks, Chosen One, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, Yanni Markovina, Carl, Anthony Mulberry, Brooke X, Christian Van Skeever, Jeremy Lowe, Zach Connor, Tom Whittem, Tevin Ticklebean whispers, "Rich people are a scam," and releases the arrow. Get him. Get him. Luke, Matt McClellan, Juan Jalapena, Matthew Sutton, Kelsey Kinneman, Tobias Clark, Russell Kasberg, Xavier Jimenez Castilla, Rena Kemp, MC Hamster, Lip Duck, Jonas Blotterman, Chris Uncle Fart Blimp Nelson. Wow, what an evocative image there. Is it if Uncle that has a blimp filled with farts, like the Joker in that first Batman movie? Or I'd like to know more, Chris. Kieran McNamara, Lamb, Coleman Laguza, Diet Soda, Jonas Ennevoldsen, Woof 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 Woof, A Pair of Scots, Iroh Forte. What a cool name. What a sick ass name. Meta for the Metaphor. New music coming soon. Zambambino.
Ma, the meatloaf.
Burger's functioning replacement for Kevin's heart. Some of Chad's bird friends. Had to just move one of my bird friends out of this room to record, and he was very mad about it. Nicholas Maloney. Lucretia McEvil. Mutant Astronaut. Everyone go check out Mutant Astronaut's new campaign for new animation. It's pretty cool. Need More Kimchi. Logan Derby. Cameron Hansen. Generally Depressing. Philip Reynolds. Nate Bit G. Been enjoying seeing your art on the Discord, my dude. Ryan R. Davis. Scott Wabel. Resident Lorcana guy who had me on the book fair last month. Please go check out his episode where I ramble about animation writing for a bit. Artist formerly known as Stinklich. Chooch rules. Chooch does rule. Ninja Breadman. Megan McCormick Mason. Sprinkle Buns. Aaron Lord, Dr. Chocula. Mikeart, SSJ Trogdor. Cassandra Harris, Max Boltzmann, Farah, Mike Spaghetti Jones. Quest hasn't graded a goblin in a while. Sorry, I haven't seen any good goblins in a while. I feel like there's a famine of goblins. Not a famine caused by a goblin, which is what you normally have. Kyle O'Neill, Kiwi of Lerv, Chevy LaGrange, Logan Kilgus, Mr. Bumpy versus the Closet Monster versus Destructo. Blarbin, Problem Child 2 on DVD, Odin's Eyehole, Taraku, Jafar says, great job in case nobody told you lately. Thank you, Jafar. I'm going to take that compliment and encouragement. You're all doing great. Dacious, Wade Norcross, Ben Flolius Sayer, The Strays, Bob Cabbage, The Shrekronomicon, Jolly Old Jules, Smellities, Spencer Leith Johnston, Solve Sigdilium, Libera Nos. Oh my god, what is that in Latin? I'm going to solve it without looking it up. Solve the sign. No, we have books. We read. I'm so sorry. I took 6 years of Latin and I don't remember what that says. I'm disappointed in myself. Alan MC. Caleb doesn't have much to say this month. Tall glass of dumb bitch juice is a chaos goblin. Hey, there's a goblin to grade right there, goblin grader. Tall glass of dumb bitch juice. Nintendo 60 jorts. Complex. Better a Yeti with a flaw than a Bigfoot without. Tudin Watson. Wyvern. Angus Keith. Big old dumb burb. Engaged to Ladybird fiance. Congratulations again. Felix. Nathan Galindo. J. Fenn Crane. Eric Wink. Ari. Andrew. Ventus 13. Ben L. Cursed Gingerbread is going on a quest. A quest to not be cursed? A quest is to curse others? Tell us more. Stackwell's Cookie Monster. Energy. Avery. Snackreiner. Fogbread. Just a lot of like food-themed support right now. Just a Ghost. You're not just a ghost. You're more than being just a ghost. And welcome new supporters, Cobalt Puppy and Zane Sade, or Zane Sade. Let me know. Thank you all so very, very much for supporting the show. We've now hit 200 episodes. That's crazy. Could not do it without all of you, especially you all in the Book of Names. Greatly appreciate you all. I think about your names all the time. Think about you when I see all the Discord. It's not like I don't think about y'all too much, but I think about y'all a lot. So thank you very much for supporting the show. Greatly appreciate it. Love you all. See you next time. You've reached the end of this episode of Goosebuds. Hosted and produced by Chad Quant. Hey, that's me. Associate produced by Heidi Butler. Edited by Ben Ravid. Art by Brock Gallagher. Theme music and interstitials by Seth Ernest. You can contact us at goosebuds@gmail.com. And please support the show and get access to bonus episodes and more at patreon.com/goosebuds.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.